Exit number 12518, Real 2.
Mrs. Langdon, Real 2. So, did you wear one of these skull caps yourself?
No, I didn't. I needed to, but I didn't do it.
But they were wearing them all over Copenhagen?
All over our families. We gave them to families with their children, and they were delighted to do them.
Was this just in Copenhagen or in other parts?
It was in Copenhagen when I did it. I don't know if that was the other part, but I believe they would have been all over Denmark, knowing the Danes. If we could find some, we could do it.
Were there any other ways in which people resisted or irritated the Germans?
Wait a minute. There is one thing I must remember to tell you. It was my brother that was a medical student staying home with my mother in Copenhagen. All the medical students were given small pistols or revolver, are they called revolvers, I presume. And we had a secret cupboard in a mahogany cupboard my mother had. They were built in, so the Germans couldn't find it. And later on, the medical student then put it in, made a little shelf in the gutter, you know, where the water runs down.
Yes.
Lifted it up and made a little shelf. And they had their revolver there in a plastic bag to make sure. And I always recall one day my brother was creeping out to put that revolver down on the street, and you see, we were very frightened after 8 o'clock at night. So my sister said, "Where has he gone?" So she opened the curtains, and the light was shining on him, and he was lying there on the pavement and rolling behind a tree, because if the German were always walking during the night on the street. So my sister was ticked off because he opened the, and there was light from inside shining on him.
A breach of the blackout.
Yeah, this is it.
Did he ever use that revolver, do you think?
No, he didn't, no. Not as far as I know.
Did you ever know of anybody who tried to get out of Denmark to go to Britain or some Sweden or anywhere?
Yes, but I not personally I knew them. But I knew of, I remember I helped them in the train up to Helsingør, and then the fisher boat took them all to Sweden. There was a very good communication there. So we helped them to get in. That was the Jewish people.
How many Jewish people did you know?
I didn't know them, but I was just told and helped to help them to cover them in small places until they could get into the train. That was in Aarhus, and they went up to in Copenhagen, and they went up to Helsingør, and then they were sailed over to Sweden. That was all that I can remember there.
Now, you saw the famous one of the famous RAF raids on the Gestapo headquarters. Which one did you actually see?
Yeah, there was only one, really one good one. And we were told, by that time I had moved in not far from the shell house, because it was easier for me to go to Rigshospitalet. So we were told that I thought it was 2 o'clock, but when I see there's two different times there, I think it's when we knew they were coming, or whatever. So we were standing there watching, and certainly we heard the plane coming, the mosquitoes, and they have to be under the radar, so German couldn't get them, they were being told that all the German SS and SA men were sitting on the second floor, and they were not allowed to bomb higher up because all the Gisling were sitting up under the roof, the German prisoner of war, included two of my school friends were up there, and they were saved. But anyhow, we didn't hear the mosquitoes, and I said, "They're coming." We got so excited. And the air raid first started after the first bombing. The German didn't know, of course, they were coming. And they did a wonderful job. They said, "Brrr," and they were all killed. And it's just terrible to think about. that you were pleased about that, but this was all the Hitler's headmen in Denmark. And then, of course, the unfortunate thing was that one fell down. I cannot remember. I thought there was only three planes, but when I see in the book, there must have been more than three planes. So the one fell down in one of the parks, and then one touched one of the masks because they were so low down from what sort of mask could it have been near the middle of Copenhagen, and he dropped some bombs to get up again, and then of course he fell down and dropped some on a bomb exploded in the Catholic school. By that time there was an air raid, and I remember I went down in the cellar, and then when the air raid was over, I said, I've got my pass, I'm running up, because my little boy was in a nursery not far from the Catholic school, and I wanted to see how he was. And I well remember a German stood like that, and I said, I've got my pass. And I ran down, until they were all right, they were down in the cellar. So I ran up and helped to get the children out. And I remember there was a windy day, that all the books from the school, they came down at Frederiksberg Allee, the big allee where the school was. And I remember all that paper. That is just funny, the vivid sign of all those books that was broken loose and come down towards me. And then I went up, and then you could hear the children screaming. It was terrible. It was very sad, and I think, but I think they did a marvelous thing, the pilots.
So you gave first aid to the children?
I was there for a time and helped with the children to get them out, and the scream was absolutely fantastic.
Were the injuries through burns or through...
Oh, no, there was... those I saw, we got out, there was a near the windows, and then I wasn't there all the time, because then the fire brigades and everything would come. I was a sort of civilian, you see. I was in my nurse uniform, but I was not in the... I was there for a short time to help them out and carry them all to Frederiksberg Allee Theater.
Was there anger against the British Air Force?
No, I tell you one thing, we were so delighted, because not delighted that they had bombed the school, because it was an accident, but that they had killed all Hitler's men. That was our great. And do you know, after the war, I was not there, because I went to Germany, as you know, after a fortnight or 3 weeks after the war. So, but I know that they had made a lovely sculpture of the nun or some children, this beautiful one, and the pilot that was there at the memorial service, and I don't know if that was the gentleman here, but he said, I cannot understand that the Danes keep on thanking us for what we did, because there's so many died. I said, but that was war.
Were there many Danes who collaborated with the Germans?
Yes, too many. There was the Danish free Denmark, no, Danish saboteur. No, what were they called in English?
What was it called in Danish? You were saying that you can't remember the name of the collaborators' movement.
No, this is silly, I can't remember that word.
Was it all types of people who collaborated with the Germans?
Yeah, all types of people.
Why do you think they collaborated?
That, I don't know.
Was there some financial benefit to doing it?
I don't think there was any financial. It's just like you said, you're conservative and you're Labour, the same. I mean, they believed in what the German did. But they were there after the war. We were really after them. They were all being taken, and I can still see big lorries come with them, and their hands was up. Is it on?
Yes.
Yeah, and their hands was they were hanging on to the lorry, and then we were throwing tomatoes at them and the eggs and all, saying, because we were so cross with them. There was a lot of them there. there was a lot of fight between the Danes, those that was against, and then those with the Germans, the Nazis.
So you saw that in Copenhagen, did
you? Yeah, I saw that in Copenhagen, yeah. And I also saw once a mosquito come. I remember I walked with my little boy near Österport, and I came on certainly a Royal Air Force plane and a German plane, and they were after each other, and they were so low, so I had to lie down on the pavement. It happened so quick. And I thought, what on earth is that? How can the British put it properly came, or I don't know. That's just the things, small things I recall. But I must say,
We should say that the raid, mosquito raid, which we described, was the famous raid on the Shell House in Copenhagen on the 21st of March, 1945. Yeah. But I think you said that you had something else to say about that.
I'll just tell you that there was 170 Gestapos killed that day. 170. And the Danish prisoner in the attic, Professor Mogens Fogh, was there, and he was saved, plus some of my school friends. And Paul Bruun, was that the name you mentioned? No.
No, Sismore is the gentleman.
No, but I mean the Danish, there was you mentioned.
Oh, Flemming Moose.
Yeah, Flemming Moose, yeah. But Paul Bruun, they came out, and do you know when they was bombed? But I spoke to my school friend, that was the prisoner who was up on the top, and he said, I remember there was a chemist's son from Aarhus. And he said, Pip, you wouldn't believe it. The door sprang open when the bombing was on. They were up on the fourth floor, and they were on the fifth floor, and they were on the second floor, and the Germans were sitting. And the door sprang open, and he said, the guard with all the keys was so shaken, so we went in and took the keys from him and opened some of the doors, and most of them were released, could run down.
Can I ask you about the amount of food you had and your living standards under the occupation? Were you getting enough food?
We were rationed with coffee, butter, bread and everything. They were rationed.
How much suffering was there?
I don't think there was very much suffering. I cannot recall that we didn't have enough. I remember we some people could didn't drink tea, so we changed all from tea and coffee and sugar and whatnot, and we had, of course, ration cards.
So were you quite comfortably off under the occupation?
Yeah, I don't think that we were starving. No, we weren't starving. We were not starving.
What do you remember about the end of the war? How did it come for you?
Oh, when at the end of the war, yes. Wait a minute. That was the 4th of May in 1949, and that was the 8:30.
In 45?
No, beg your pardon, 45, yeah. A German capitulated. And then 2 days after, the British troop came there, and we were all, when we heard it in the radio, we said, now Denmark is free, Denmark is free. And we ran to the street, and we took all the black paper off the trams and opened the windows. The Germans then just disappeared. I saw the troops. We took all the guns, and I said, not me personally, but they put all their guns and all their medals and everything was taken off them, and we made them walk home. They walked to Sjælland, Jutland, lots of them, and Fyn and Jutland, and down to Germany. And then 2 days after, the British troops arrived. My dear, that was a party. They came up to Jutland and came to Copenhagen, and I recall a big tank was standing on the middle of the square in Copenhagen, and I was a young nurse, and I saw, a British tank. So I jumped up on the tank with my book and said, would you please write your name down? And I gave him a big hug, and I said, right, and then he wrote Smith. And that always tickled me. And Smith wrote me a letter, and he sent me a photograph of him after, and you should have seen him. He was a big, fat man, but he was lovely. That's the thing I recall. that tank standing there in the middle of Copenhagen.
So when the Danes took the weapons from the Germans, did the Germans resist that, or did they?
Oh no, they were all
obedient.
Obedient, oh yes. The war was over.
Now, so there were 2 days between the German surrender and the British arrival.
Yeah, there was 2 days.
What happened in those 2 days?
This
was that.
I think we were just singing and dancing on the streets.
Was that?
I really do think we were singing and dancing on the streets.
Was there any disorder or crime?
No, there was of course the Danes that had with the Germans, they were trying to hide away. There was and I remember they made a big dollar Hitler, and we hanged him up in a tree. He was hanging on a tree like a big doll, a life-size doll. And we were throwing everything in that figure, and he had a big green face, and we were ever so pleased. So that was the sort of thing we did.
Was this in a park?
It was in a park, yeah. It was near Østerport station, yeah. I remember that. When I walked around. But I always still feel the war was terrible, but I think that the world is just as bad, if not worse, today. So I wonder if that has any interest to hear all about that, because it's not really relevant to what happened today in the world. What do you think? I feel that in my age.
You don't think the war has done any good?
No. But no, that's not what I mean. I mean, today there's so much happened because there is really a war on all the time, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think it's worse today than it was during the war, in the 40-45 war. That's what I feel.
In what sense?
It's more cruel. I think it's more cruel.
Were there some human qualities that were brought out during the war because the war was on, do you think? Were people better during the war?
Yeah, we stuck together. We stuck together, Danes. We really did. And we helped each other. In my circle, I remember, on Hospitaller, everywhere where we were together.
Because British people sometimes say that during the war we were all one. We were all together. Was it the same in Denmark?
Yeah, but I do think, except for when we had those Danes that really helped the Germans, but they were paid for it in the end. They paid for it in the end.
Coming back to those German troops who were disarmed on the 4th of May, were they harmed or unharmed?
I don't think that I cannot remember. I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. And it's no good, because that seems. I think we were all so excited, so that wasn't really much. They disappeared. They disappeared. What I can remember. Certainly they disappeared. And then we got the other British coming in, and I thought that was. We were all so happy to see them.
Now, you told me that after the war you went to help at Belsen. How did that come about?
That came about have you heard of the UNRWA, the United Nations Rehabilitation Relief Organization? Some American nurses came over, and doctors came over, and asked in different hospitals if there was any that was interested to go down and help the prisoner of war, the British zone. And of course, my senior nurse said, "Pip, you really ought to go." And I said, "Yes, on one condition, I can get my little boy down there to an officer's mess." And later on, I got him down. I was down there for 6 months before, but I was then in the officer's mess. I had a Latvian DP, au pair girlfriend. And we worked for 2 years down there, but we were interviewed. And I always recall that we were interviewed, and we should be able to speak German, English, and French. And of course, I was a bit naughty, because I was interviewed in German and English. That was okay. But when the French came, I thought, that's stiff. So I said to the nurse, "You will excuse me, but I'm a very shy person. So if I come down there, I shall be able to speak French." I got a very good Estonian secretary in my office, and he could speak all the languages. And before I left the 2 years, he could speak Danish. He was fantastic. So he helped me with all reports and so on, and we didn't do much French, actually. There were German and English most.
Where did you first go? To Belsen?
We went in lorries down to Holland, in Haarlem in Holland, where we got uniforms.
Haarlem?
Holland, in Holland.
Haarlem, in Holland.
No, Haarlem, H-A-A-I-M, Haarlem, in Holland. And we went down there and were being told what to do and what team we were going to be in. But all that paper and my diary is lying in the documents department in the Imperial War Museum. So there's no need to talk too much about that.
Well, if you can put it in your own words.
Yes.
So it was nursing work that you were doing?
Well, I was a nurse, and we were going to have prisoner of war from Belsen. That was most Polish and all the three Baltic countries. They were coming into the camp, and the British military has already got most of them out from Belsen into the camps. And then we moved in, doctors and nurses, secretaries, social workers, in a team, and we were then going to organize them in the camps where we could get them, see how many expecting mothers we had. It was just like a health visitor work, actually. So we moved in, but on the way down there we went in to see Belsen, and that has just been emptied. And I remember I could smell the carbolic, that terrible smell. And there was not being rebuilt now, but it is now, with graves and so on. But we saw the big bunkers where all the bodies were being buried. That was not very nice.
Can you remember of the names of the camps for the displaced persons?
Oh yes, I had 10 camps. When I was in team 238 outside Lübeck, where I was being sent together with a Danish doctor. We were together there, and then we were a team. We were seven different nationalities. There was American, Belgian, French, and we had some. We had German help to in the kitchen. We took over home, you know, completely. But there's one thing I would like to tell, and that was during the war, German took over a hospital in Copenhagen. I cannot remember the Frederiksberg Hospital, but they took over a hospital, and they said to the doctors, can I speak German? And I said,
yes,
certainly.
Zweistunde
heraus. And that was during the war, and Zweistunde we were out, as we, the Danish people. And then when we came down to Germany, and I was speaking German, so the doctor said, we are going to take a Red Cross hospital over in Lübeck. Will you people take over the nursing nursing side of it, or speak German to all the nuns that is in that hospital? It was a Catholic hospital. And there's about 100 beds, but we needed desperate. There were so many pregnant women in the camp. There were so many ill people. So we needed a hospital. So we had a big meeting around in a big mahogany table. And here was the German doctors sitting and their staff. And the British doctor was sitting there and the staff. And then the German said, what hospital do you want? We wanted that hospital. So the British doctor said, now would you mind if we give you a week you can move out? So the doctors, and of course, there were not many of the British people that spoke German, but I could speak German, and my ears grew so big, because I was listening, because the German doctor said, einen Augenblick. And they went in a corner in that big room, and they were laughing in German, and they said, English people, they said, a week, they just wait. And I could hear that. And I was a young nurse, I was not, you know, one of the seniors, I just kept quiet until he came back and said, okay, I know what it. This is good. So I said to the medical officer, excuse me, can I have a little word for you? So we went in the other corner, and I said, do you know what they said? They said they could just wait and see what's left, and they gave us a week. Oh, they can't do that. We must give them a week. I told them the story about Copenhagen during the war. No, we couldn't do that. So
you've been given 2 hours.
Yeah, I told them that story. The British doctor, Mikkelsen, said, I said, look, this is what they did in Denmark. Twice don't have us. Well, the British said, we cannot do that. I said, but I'm just telling you what happened during the war when I was there. So a week passed and we moved in, and I was over the nuns. And when we came into the hospital, yeah, there was not one clock. They were all taken out, all the rooms. And all the instruments from the theatre was lying in the coal bunkers underneath the coal. And lots of things were broken. So the doctor said, but how could they do that? So I said, but I told you. But of course, there come the mentality of the German and the British. The German said, heraus. You give a German an order. Isn't that so?
Yes.
Do you know the Germans?
Yes.
And the British couldn't understand that happened. So that's what we had to prepare all that before we could move in.
So there was nothing left.
No, yeah, no, there was left. There were some of the mattresses. There was cut. You know, like villains, just to be naughty. I remember.
Was that in Lübeck?
That was in Lübeck. Yeah.
And you were in team 238?
I was in team 238, yeah. So when we got all the patients in, then we got Red Cross passes from America Center or England to the NAFI, you know, for all the patients. And I remember I wanted to distribute those passes myself because I knew we had German nurses. And one day I came in and found out that all the German nurses has opened the parcel, taken all the cigarettes out. Oh, I was cross because when I was in uniform, you see, sometimes you have more power when you're standing there in uniform. I said, really, really cross. And I had a photograph taken of me standing in that hospital where I really articulated.